The only thing that would have, at that point, that would have prevented them from going first and second today is some kind of mechanical, which of course happens in this. It could have happened to Matthew Vanderpool. Now, when he had 3 minutes, he can have a lot of mechanicals.
Go to the bathroom. Number two.
Stop. That's one thing we've not ever talked about here on The Move is he was so far ahead that he stopped to take a deuce. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to The Move podcast. Talking about the 2024 Paris-Roubaix, the hell of the North. Should have just been renamed, I don't know, something else, something to do with Matthew Vanderpool. What a performance. Borderline boring. He didn't think so, but what an exceptional ride. Well, we're going to break all that down as we get along here. If you're watching the show, you'll notice, the usual crew is not here. Well, you got myself, you got JP Hager there in Austin, and Spencer Martin. Wait, Spencer? Boulder?
Yeah, Boulder in my miniature recording studio here.
Nice.
Austin's insane right now between Austin, the Cap 10K is this morning.
Yeah.
One of the biggest 10K runs in the world, probably 25,000 people. And then, of course, the Eclipse is running right through Central Texas. So it is everybody's flying in from all over to catch the Eclipse on Tuesday.
And I'm in Dallas, Texas, which is also in the path of totality. Up here for Olivia's volleyball tournament, the Lone Star Invitational. I was telling y'all a second ago, this man, this is crazy. Like being a volleyball dad is totally crazy. They're doing it at a convention center, so it's not made for volleyball, but they bring in these temporary courts. There's 120 courts, teams from all over the country. It is a complete shit show. I don't know how it happens. Like I don't know. Well, that's a part of me wonders if I'm in the wrong business. This is crazy. It's fun.
Are you going to show your daughter any of the old stomping grounds in Dallas or just boogie back?
You know, that's the old stomping grounds. Yeah.
Maybe Cruise Force Lane.
It does sort of bring up some memories. I'm take her to Deep Ellum where I used to go clubbing. what a ride. Vanderpool's just, I don't even know. I mean, won by 3 minutes. That's stuff you just don't. Well, I guess you're starting to see more and more.
For our listeners who haven't seen the race, I mean, we could basically describe what happens and you'll know you can, you're not missing much, but even in the post-race interview, he's like, well, I got to enjoy this. Unlike last week. Last week I was on the limit, when he won Flanders. This week he said, I got to really enjoy it. He knew I was good. And just, can you imagine the feeling in the rainbow jersey, just cruising in a comfort zone? Like, wow.
Yep. Before we get into all the action, today's show brought to you by Element. We talk about it all the time. This is our go-to hydration source. It is getting to be that time of year. The sun is out. Well, tomorrow it will be gone for about 4 minutes, but the sun is out. It's getting warmer. You know, Austin is heating up. So what does that mean? As y'all know, I sweat like crazy. I've found something that actually helps me replace all these things better than ever. And that's Element. 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium, has no sugar, no gluten, no artificial ingredients, no BS. It is absolutely the real deal. Our listeners can get a free Element sample pack with any order when you head over to drinklmnt.com/themove. That's drinklmnt.com/themove. With that sample pack, you can try all the different flavors, figure out the ones that you like best, and really dial in your product offering. Again, drinklmnt.com/themove. Also today brought to you by Tushy. Now this I love this thing. Like I've said it before. If you hadn't listened before, I'll remind you, my wife has been, probably like a lot of y'all's wives, right? For you dudes listening, you got these wives that, if you're building a new house, she says, I want one of these $5,000 toilets that's you sit down and it's hot and it squirts water. I'm not kidding. It does, one of these Japanese-esque toilets. or, you know, they'll even ask to just replace the one that you have with one of these $5,000 toilets. Years ago, I was, I'm not spending $5,000 on a toilet. I'm just not. And I saw on the internet, Tushy, and Tushy has, has a toilet seat, has the sprayer, has all of the things that the other version does. And it's so simple that even I could install it, right? So y'all know, I don't do much of anything. I can't fix a flat tire. So if I can install this toilet and make the wife happy, well, all right, then you know it's special, right? So here's the deal. Stop wiping until you bleed. Join the 3 million butts. Check that out. 3 million butts who have already made the switch to Tushy. For a limited time, our listeners get 10% off your entire order when you use the code WEDO at checkout. That's 10% off of your order at hellotushy.com with the promo code WEDO. Also today brought to you by AG1, pure and simple. It's about taking control of your health. I've been a fan of this product for 5 years. So many other folks out there are as well. I have not been great my entire life with all of the stuff you're supposed to eat, vegetables and fruits and all these things and eating all the different colors. Well, I found a hack. My hack is AG1. Taking control of my health has never been easier and it's never been more simple. That's why for the last, I don't know, like I told you, 5+ years, I have been religious about drinking AG1. And in fact, I'm sitting here in this janky hotel in Dallas and my travel packs are right there. Helps me feel energized, focused, nourished, and strong and ready for the day. Each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. There's one product I had to recommend. It's AG1, special offer for our listeners. Again, taking control of your health. You get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/themove. That's drinkag1.com/themove. By the way, I think I read the other day, 50% of Americans are actually low in vitamin D. So take advantage of that and boost those vitamin D levels. All right, let's talk about that. I mean, Matthew Vann, what a special, special athlete. And not just him. Boy, how about that team? I mean, Spencer, I know you watch these things and watch them closely. It was like there was no other team in the race. They completely dominated from a team's perspective early on in the race. And then obviously Vanderpool, incredible. They also got first and second, and they have won Milan-San Remo, Tour Flanders, and now Paris-Roubaix. What a start to a season. Keeping in mind, 3 years ago, this was not a World Tour team. I mean, what Alpecin has done and built is incredible.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else woke up at like 5 a.m. to watch the start of this race or the start of the cobblestones. They were on the front going into the first cobble sector, and they never left it. I mean, it was breaking. There was crosswind, so it was a little that was adding friction. But then they just broke the race up earlier than I've ever seen it broke up. They caught the breakaway at 140K to go. I mean, that's absurd. And then I don't know if you guys noticed this, but like Visma really struggling with flats. Like I feel like the last few years they've been struggling with a lot of flats. Little Trek was struggling with flats. Alpecin had a few, but they just seemed immune to all that. Maybe that's being at the front, but it just feels a little bit more dialed in there than any other team. And Lance, you said first and second. This is their second year getting first and second at this race. Yeah. I couldn't find another example of a team winning the first three monuments of the season. I mean, it's incredible what they're doing with, you know, I'm sure their budget is growing as Vanderbilt becomes a bigger star, but it's not a top tier budget. It's definitely smaller than Ineos's budget. And where was Ineos today? I mean, what they're doing is really incredible.
Well, Ineos was nowhere. I mean, they called up Tom Pidcock because Dylan and Barla was not feeling well. I think when it got down when it was down to 60 guys, Ineos, this team you're referencing, had one rider, and that was Tom Pidcock. So, tale of two teams there.
I mean, he was good. I mean, he's just so talented. Like, I was impressed with what he did. I don't know if you guys know. So it's Sunday today. On Monday, the man could not walk. So the fact that they sent him shows, all due respect, a little bit how desperate they are. Like, if someone's being carried around by a first responder on Monday because they cannot use their legs. And then you think, let's send them to the hardest race of the year on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's not a great sign.
Yeah.
What are you guys' thoughts on Alpecin and this trajectory? Like, as you guys talk about other directors, other team owners, managers often, I don't think we've ever talked about anybody behind the scenes at Alpecin ever.
That's a great question for Johan. Like I don't know enough, or I'm not dialed or connected enough to the inner workings of the sport like Johan Bruneel is, but somebody there has a plan and is implementing that plan and has had a plan. This isn't just, look, I think momentum and team morale is certainly in any team sport is massive. But before you get to that, you have to have some planning and some structure to the team. They have done this right. And then you layer on top, you know, a star like Vanderpool, the momentum of winning the first three monuments of the year. That certainly helps. But that's a great question for Johan. He'll know more about that.
It's just wild when you think back on it. You know, when Vanderpool came as a World Tour pro, it's like, how did the big teams miss him? Or was it always a strategy of Vanderpool? You know, we know his pedigree. So he's got, you know, family who knows the sport. Maybe they intentionally said, you need to be on this smaller team so you will be a bigger star.
It's a great question. I mean, his lineage, right? Look at the Kentucky Derby, you know, some horse wins the Kentucky Derby and they pay the horse like $500,000 to go sleep with a girl horse. I mean, the lineage, right? His grandfather is Raymond Poulidor. His father is Audrey Vanderpool. Like, you start to look at that, like, this might work. So that's another Johan question. I don't know. I mean, we know we focused on cyclocross and there was that period of his career, but yeah,
it's a great maybe question. That was part of it too. He went to a team that would allow him.
Yeah.
To continue to pursue cross where
not to mention he still races. We all remember what happened at the Olympics mountain bike. I mean, the guy can ride. If all of a sudden they busted out a tricycle race or a high wheeler race, or they said to the pro peloton, we're gonna have a BMX race. He'd win those too. He can ride anything with wheels. He can ride it. So good question.
When Canyon comes out with their tricycle line, he'll be racing tricycles to promote that. But JB, it's funny, Mitch. So I thought the same thing when he was a younger rider. I was like, why is he on this janky team? This is weird. It seemed like he was doing it just so he could race these different disciplines, but I actually interviewed with them a few years ago to potentially work with the team. And it is I would say the most buttoned up organization I've ever seen. Like they think about everything and their GM, Christoph Rudhoof, is like this guy, he's a very intense guy who just, I mean, he's thinking about like, they just won. I guarantee he's thinking about how do we win next year? Like what's the lineup for next Roubaix? How do we replicate this? Like this guy lives and breathes winning and it's all he cares about and just puts the team together very well. Like it's a super serious organization. I think one of their biggest strengths is just knowing who they are, the confidence to be who they are because they don't have GC riders. You know, they had Jay Vine. And they thought, well, we don't want to pursue this. Let's just, Jay Vine's going to go elsewhere. We're going to double down on what we're good at. And I don't think enough teams feel confident enough to do that.
For example, Spencer, that name you just mentioned, right? The mastermind here. This just shows you how disconnected I am, at least from the inner workings of the teams and the GMs of the teams. I've never heard that name ever. So, but doesn't matter, right? What matters is he's done it right. And surely if you're Alpecin, right, you came into a program that probably had a fairly small budget. And this has been what a stroke of luck if you're them, right? Compared to some of the other programs that we know what they're spending for those teams. What a deal.
That's an interesting thing you bring up, Spencer, that they don't have GC ambitions. Whereas, well, Lance can attest to it. I mean, if in your era, the tour was everything.
Right.
The U.S. market would not have cared in the late 90s if you won all of these, right? Because they don't know the races. But that's just an interesting point that he's on a team that is not concerned about that, where the sponsors usually dictate, okay, what are you doing in the Tour de France, right?
Well, but winning the first three monuments of the year That might right not equal there. A tour win, but that certainly equals a Giro or a Vuelta win. No doubt. I mean,
and the team is good enough to go to the tour and win stages. To me, that's the key, that it's not like Vanderpool can go do his thing and they can still win multiple tours. They have the best sprinter in the world in Jasper Philipsen. So they still have exposure there. And another thing about the team is that they, like they don't, it, like if you think about the GC rat race, that's expensive. Not the GC rider. Like we all know those are expensive, but the domestiques, we're talking million bucks a year for a decent domestique. So the fact that they don't pay that out means they can just invest in this. And their secret sauce is cyclocross. Like if they just signed Cameron Mason, I believe, who's one of the best cyclocross riders in the world, not signed with the world tour or a road team. All these guys come from cyclocross, like Tim Merlier, Matthew Vanderpool. Oh. And so they just see who are the best cross racers. Maybe we should sign them to be on the road. Oh, why are we at the front at 150 to go at Roubaix and all our riders are better at avoiding flats and can handle these cobblestones better? Because they pick these guys with the pedigree, the bike handling pedigree to do that. I think it helps in their lead outs too, that they're all incredibly good bike handlers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, looking in hindsight with Vanderpool and going back to San Remo, because people were like, when Philipsen won, again, Alpecin, people were like, yeah, Vanderpool could have gone for that, right? He could have had that win just the same.
Yeah.
But looking out for a teammate. And then you saw what Philipsen did, the work that he put in today, disrupting the chase. Like that was, in retrospect, what a great move for the team, for teammate. They both get the wins. Philipsen will bury himself for Vanderpool.
Classic bike racing, right? You have the luxury of being able to sit on, and you're certainly the fastest guy in that group, if not one of the top three fastest guys in the sport. I mean, that the writing was on the wall there. I mean, the only thing that would have, at that point, that would have prevented them from going first and second today is some kind of mechanical, which of course happens in this. It could have happened to Matthew Vanderpool. Now, when he had 3 minutes, he can have a lot of mechanicals.
go to the bathroom. Number two, stop.
That's one thing we've not ever talked about here on the move is he was so far ahead that he stopped to take a deuce. we've never, that's never, now that'd be something.
Now, wasn't it Vanderpool who went in someone's home?
That was, at the World Championships. Yeah. When they had the protesters, that's a great point. I'm glad you remembered that. Speaking of deuces, he's looking around saying, surely these people will let me use their bathroom. But that's a level of comfort. And I mean, you see him on the bike. He's even when he's up, like there's, he's going around these corners. I mean, it's just second nature to him. It's fun to watch. I mean, it's boring to watch somebody win by 3 minutes, but man, he's fun to watch on a bike.
Can you imagine how discouraging it is for great riders like Peterson, Paulett, who else was up there?
You had Kung was up there. I mean, there was
Kung. But you imagine you're up there in this chase, and Vanderpool just goes and no one could answer. Yep. And you're sitting in this chase with Philipsen, teammate. Like, can you imagine what that does to you mentally?
And I said this to you guys on the group chat. Like, if there's one interview I want to see at the finish, I don't need to see Matt. I mean, yes, you have to interview the winner, but I want Mads Pedersen's reaction. Like, what does he say? Like, I don't know. There was nothing I could do. I mean, certainly not going to say I got caught out or I was in bed, whatever. I want to hear obviously it's going to take a couple of hours for the press to come out, but I'd love to know exactly what he thought.
I mean, it did help Vanderpool that Pedersen or Philipsen's on his wheel. Same thing last year when he attacked, that it's almost like a screen, like a basketball pick. Because he goes and Pedersen has to step out, go to the rough part of the cobblestones, come around. And, maybe he wouldn't be able to stay with him anyway, but it definitely helped. Philipsen helps. And then, as you say, like you're in hell. If you don't go with him and you're stuck with Philipsen, that's the worst place in bike racing to be. I mean, we could even talk for Jasper Philipsen doing the second time, finishing second in Roubaix, second consecutive time. And he's a sprinter. Like this is his part-time job. Mm-hmm. And he's just racking up podiums at a big one day race. It's really wild.
Again, that team morale thing, I think is it, everything. They, the dinner last night, they, you never know how these races are going to totally unfold, but boy, they're sitting at dinner last night, looking around. If there's other teams in the hotel, which oftentimes there are, they're looking around just going, all right, you're getting owned. You're getting owned. Yep. You're getting dropped. Yep. Seeing the douches. It's so powerful and so magical. Let's keep breaking it down. But before we do, today's show also brought to you by HVMN. We often hear that fasting and exercise are good for the brain. I can certainly attest to that. HVMN launched the world's first drinkable ketone in 2017. Ketone IQ is their latest innovation on ketones with improved effectiveness, taste, and cost. Ketone IQ delivers clean fuel that can cross the blood-brain barrier, supplying your brain and body sustained energy, focus, and sharpness, putting you in flow, lasting for hours. It's also no wonder that HVM supplied ketones to more than 60% of the teams in this peloton. They're also working directly with Visma Lisa Bike. Ketone IQ shots helped George get through Paris-Roubaix Fondo Ride and jet lag yesterday. That's directly from the source. You can save 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/themove. Again, that's hvmn.com/themove. Last one of the day. Today's show brought to you by Caldera Labs. Gentlemen, we all know that first impressions matter. And if you're not taking care of your skin, that's going to be the first thing someone notices and instantly either thinks you're way older than you are or that you just don't care about your appearance. Show them that you do and make a great first impression with Caldera Lab. Caldera Lab creates high performance men's skincare products, and the regimen leads off their product lineup. A twice a day routine to transform your skin. Caldera Lab is a leader in men's skincare, made only with top tier ingredients, and clinical trials have found 94% of men's skin showed an overall younger looking appearance after using Caldera Labs for just a few weeks. Head on over to calderalab.com. You get 20% off when you use the code WEDO. And that's Caldera, CalderaLab.com, CalderaLab.com. You get 20% off with the code WEDO. Everybody's like looking at it. We're on Zoom. Everybody's like looking at themselves. Do I look older? Or do I just not care? I'm in the don't give a fuck category. JB, no, not us. No.
Well, this is where, now we should jump into this. This is where Spencer freaks everybody out. Is just his knowledge of the history of the sport. Yeah. So let's talk record books here with this Paris-Roubaix and a double. Let's start with that. How many people have pulled off the double of Flanders-Roubaix in history? Do you have a clue, or modern history?
It's actually a little bit more than you think, because it stands to logic, right? If you're the best last week, you're probably pretty good this week. Yep. I mean, just recently, let's say modern post 2000 era, It's the two big guys. Tom Boonen and Fabian Cancellara both did it twice. So that's four occurrences since 2000. Vanderpool, I mean, you enter elite territory when you do it. And what's funny is you might say, well, Van Aert wasn't present for those. What's funny about these rivalries is if you go back to Cancellara and Boonen, they were rarely both healthy the same year. So a lot of those doubles were because the other one was out. So it's like the moon waxing and waning. You know, these next year Vanderpool might be hurt. Van Aert wins the double. That's kind of how this always plays out. Like, people misremember these amazing battles. Doesn't happen that often. One weird thing is my wife asked during the race, as soon as Vanderpool broke away, she just said peak Sagan or peak Vanderpool. And it's like sent me down a rabbit hole. My God, what would happen if Sagan was here? But I went back. Sagan only won one Roubaix and one Flanders. Like, already less than Vanderpool. And the thing that I've been kind of wondering about is, like, why did Alpecin make it so hard so early? Why would you do that? 157K to go, you're breaking the race up. And one of the things is it eliminates variables. Why ride easy when you can ride hard? If you're the strongest rider, the harder race favors you. It's like Jonas at the Tour. Visma makes it hard every day. Everybody else cracks. It does keep you from getting Sagan'd. Do you guys remember this, where Peter Sagan would come in as the favorite, last 50K, he's marked out, someone attacks, someone else wins. Like, it's almost like the Roodhoof brothers have reverse engineered the Sagan era and said, how do we keep this from happening? Let's just blow everybody out of the water early So then there's no one to play tactical games with Vanderpool. Like, that's the big thing that stuck out to me today, that we're seeing cycling tactics like taken to the extreme of like, will we eventually see people attacking in the, like, favorites attacking in the neutral zone at Roubaix to try to make it as hard as possible because it favors them? Here's another crazy stat about Vanderpool. So you'd say the first six, it's been 6 years that he's been winning monuments. When his first in 20, wait, can that be right? How old are we? Time is flying by. So he won his first in 2020. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. So in his first 5 seasons, he wins 6 monuments. So that's more than Tade. He's like has the record for the most monuments for current riders. He passed Tade in the last week because he won 2 in the last week. And Eddie Merckx has a lot. Like Eddie Merckx won something like 10 monuments in his first 6 years. So at first you're like, well, he's not as good as Merckx, but this is what's crazy. He's only started 17 monuments and won 6 monuments. That's like, what is that? A 34% win rate. Yeah. Merckx won 5 in his first 17. So he's actually ahead of Eddie Merckx if you filter for race starts as opposed to just seasons. And he could win the next monument. Like he could win Liège if he starts it. So like we're seeing a guy win monuments at a rate that we've never seen before.
Yeah. Merckx-esque. Wow.
And there's another guy in the sport winning monuments at a Merckx X rate in Tadej Pogačar. It's a wild time to be alive.
All right. Listeners, strap in here. Let's test Spencer. Who's done Roubaix victory in the championship jersey?
In the world champions jersey?
Mm-hmm.
They said it on the coverage. The last person. Oh, gosh.
Cano, maybe? Sagan's the last person, right?
Sagan was the last to win in the rainbow jersey.
It's not common.
It's not common. Speaking of the coverage I was watching, and speaking of Matthew Vanderpool, for you Americans that watched on Peacock, look, Phil Liggett's had a great career. You know, the guy's 80 years old. He's a Hall of Famer. But man, he called Matthew Vanderpool Audrey Vanderpool 10 times. Like, that's just not the, if that was Jim Nantz covering the Masters, and let's just say it's in 10 years time and Charlie Woods is competing for the green jacket, he keeps calling him Tiger Woods, he wouldn't do it anymore, right? You get replaced. It again, all respect, Hall of Fame career, we gotta find somebody else. Like
I was thinking about Liggett.
I just had to get that. It was you guys watched on Flow and using a VPN, so that's, yeah. You were spared, but you, hey, you people listening at home that watched it on Peacock, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's just unbelievable.
I was having a little bit of a Liggett flashback because the first time I saw Roubaix, I have to remind Johan sometimes that we didn't get to watch these races growing up. They're not on TV in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. All right. You were watching VHSs.
And I was thinking about Liggett, who we had the production company that would film these races.
Yeah.
Print them on VHS tapes and mail them, and I would go rent them from a bike shop. Like, that's isn't that crazy to think? And you're watching it months and months and months after the race. Like, that's how we consumed these races, thanks to Phil Liggett. So again, Hall of Famer in that regard, but man.
But back to your point earlier, Spencer, of the race that Alpecin rode, by the way, you know, the tactically riding the race the way they did, because they are so strong and they can do it, it makes it harder for everybody else. It also keeps them out of trouble, right? This is a race, even on those earlier cobbled sections, just being able to see, it's one thing to, obviously there's more crashes in the back, less crashes in the front, but being able just to see around other guys so you can see places to avoid. There was so much stress about this new run into the Arenberg Forest. There was a lot of
the chicane
last week. They built in the chicane beforehand. It turns out it didn't matter. I mean, I think they came in, you know, years past, they have come in there with 100 plus guys and it's a straight run in, and God forbid the weather is bad. They're going, you know, they're sprinting as fast as they can. So they're going 35 miles an hour. It didn't matter.
Was the goal of that to slow them down before they hit
to slow it
cobbles?
Down. Yeah, because the run in there can be so fast. And if it is wet, it's messy. But there were 60 guys when they hit that chicane. They were still sprinting those 60 guys were still sprinting for the chicane. But that's very different than 120 guys sprinting forward. I'd be surprised if they do that again. It just seemed,
but it would have, may have made a difference had it been wet.
It wouldn't have made a difference at all. Of course, nobody ever knows how the race is going to unfold in the earlier kilometers, but it wouldn't have made a difference.
It is. A hot take here. I kind of like the chicane. I mean, I was rewatching the last few years, and guys, I don't know if it's the tubeless or what's going on, but they hit Arenberg and their wheels explode. You know, so it adds a bit of randomness to the race. Like, you might just be fifth and the fourth wheel blows up. You're out of the race. Like this, at least you enter it slower. It's a very hard cobble section. So I feel like
it certainly makes it harder.
Yeah.
I mean, you're losing the advantage of getting a run at it.
Yeah.
Versus starting from, I don't know, less than 10 miles an hour. The chicane was sharp. So they had to, that definitely makes it. And not that I've ever done it or ever even gone and ridden it for fun. The Arenberg Forest is slightly uphill. So you're starting from, it certainly would make it harder, which I think we should all be a fan of. Speaking of the sport wanting to make it harder. And I mean, we also talked, Spencer, this is for you, because they kept talking about record pace, right? I think the average speed was 47.82. Last year was 46.84. Spencer, when was the previous edition or the previous record for highest average speed?
Yeah, you have to go all the way back to 2022. So the last three editions have been the three fastest editions.
Yep.
And this has shrunk. This race is shrinking. This is a trend across every race. It's 5.5 hours. It used to be 6.5 hours. Yep. It might have to be Nice-Roubaix next year to get it back to monument distance.
Or even start like they originally did in Paris.
Yeah. Start on the Champs-Élysées. Roll out from there. I'm sure they got nothing going on.
Speaking of world champions to win Paris-Roubaix, two days in a row. Shout out to Lotta Kopecky. She won yesterday the women's Paris-Roubaix, which... of course, we did the show with Ali and Mara yesterday, but two rainbow jerseys and a rope.
Hell of a finish, too. Worth going back and visiting if you haven't watched finish.
I mean, it was not Matthew Vanderpool-esque, but in terms of what she did, the way she won the sprint on a velodrome coming over the top, as we discussed yesterday, you have to actually ride farther as you come over the top of somebody on a velodrome. She dominated, so... We had two rainbow jerseys completely dominant in different fashions, but both totally dominated the race.
It kind of reminded me, watching the women's race was like going back in time. You're like, oh, all the way back in 2021, this is how the men's race was raced, where many people came to the finish line and sprinted for it versus the strongest rider saying, I'm just going to drop everybody and come in a few minutes ahead.
You know, another fun thing that I got onto this, and I've heard a little bit about this in the past, but Anna, my wife, was asking me as she was sort of looking over my shoulder as I was watching, and just asking about the sections, the cobbled sections, and there's actually a lot of history there. Obviously, I mean, these cobblestones, some of them go back 100 years. The alternative, I wasn't around 100 years ago, but the alternative then was dirt roads. So if you're farmers or any kind of work equipment, pulling that stuff or taking that stuff over cobblestones was better than certainly taking it over dirt, which if it rains, it turns to mud. So they had cobbled some of these sections. Well, now we live in 2024, and what's better than cobblestones? That's pavement or asphalt. So there have actually been sections of this part of this region in France that have been paved over. Which would be a disaster, right? If the world didn't care, but didn't even know about bike racing, and they said, well, these suck, this is uncomfortable, let's just pave it, then Paris-Roubaix would be finished. That is not a bike race anymore. But as is the case in so many other times out there, you have this nonprofit, and it's called Les Amis de Paris-Roubaix, who have gone in, and they're supported by the government. They're supported by, it's a nonprofit. They're supported by generous donations. And they're actually going in and preserving these sections, not just protecting them, meaning don't pave them or don't put asphalt over them, But in certain sections, they're actually going in and refurbishing these sections. So they will take the stones out and they make sure to place them back so that they're still difficult, right? Because it, again, keep in mind, if they all went away, or if you just made them perfect stones, the race isn't the same. So they have, and again, their name is Les Amis de Paris-Roubaix. They go in and refurbish these sections and keep them as epic as they are. I love this story. And they've got, so you guys can, and gals can look online, and they've got great photos. You see the level of detail. They've got students involved. A lot of the students are from the horticulture department for the local university. So they're the thinking there is that is so much of landscape and landscape architecture is about the beds and the planters. So these kids are coming in and restoring these sections to keep them what they are today. I think, you know, without it, we don't have everybody.
Yeah, they would have paved over all of them. I was thinking about that, that today. Like, it makes no sense these roads are here. JB, I have to apologize. There's five people in Belgium screaming at their car radio right now because I didn't mention Peter Van Petegem won the double in 2003. Let's not forget Peter. Speaking of when you couldn't watch races live in the U.S.
Were you sitting there just looking at all your data and not listening?
Well, I had to. I was like, wait.
Because I got to tell you something. It's rare when I talk about things and it warms my own heart. Like what I just laid out was warming my heart. And you were worried about Peter Van Petegem and 21 years ago. I mean, this is fucking, I mean, I'm talking about something that if it doesn't happen, then none of this happens. But that's why we love you. That's it. 2000, whatever. Peter Van, by the way, Peter Van Petegem was, I raised that guy. He's a beast. This guy roll up to a bike race. You're like, oh shit. I guess I'm getting second. Like he was a monster. Like that boy could, they put a number on him. He's like, let's go. Let's race. He was tough.
What was he like outside? Obviously good cobbled racer. Since he won the double. Like, was he just like, was he quick or just so strong? He could just ride people off.
He was, well, he was quick, but not in the sense that a Philipson or a Cavendish or somebody like that. He just very scrappy, very, very scrappy. And what I was referring to is he looks strong. He was some guys kind of come and go and off season looks different for others. He always looked ready to race. He was always like that guy.
That's cool.
Anything else fun?
Spencer, any other takeaways before we wrap up the show?
I've been up for a long time. My mind is melting. I can't remember if this was the pre-show or the show, but did you mention JB the last, there's only been one other person to win by three or more minutes. And it was Johan Museo in 2002.
And he did it for the very same reason. I mean, look, Matthew Vanderpool is going to win by some time advantage. We don't know. But Museo did it the very same way that Vanderpool did it today, because he had that team, right? Team early in the race, and then the team later in the race, you know, even just one teammate later in the race that totally neutralized. If you're Mads Pedersen and these other guys, you're not that motivated or that interested to pull around Jasper Philipsen when you know he's going to come around you and he's going to get second. So that completely kills the chase. Would it have been a minute and a half? Maybe. But that's the way, I mean, Museo's teams back in those days were so dominant. They had guys there and everybody's like, well, this sucks.
Heard Vanderpool say he wasn't even on the limit. I mean, he could have made that gap bigger, but he was just managing at that point, especially on cobbles. Well, you don't want to foolishly go down.
And I don't know if he's racing Liège. Spencer, you brought it up. That's another Johan question. But if he is, and he's on reserve, I said it last weekend, like surely he got such a gap. Either he thought it or his director said, hey, oh, by the way, you know, we got Paris-Roubaix next weekend. Just, you know, drop it down on a couple gears and conserve whatever you can. But if he's on reserve today and racing Liège, yeah. I mean, it's not a perfect race for him, but the guy we saw today can definitely win Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
I don't know how accurate the upcoming races are. Do you know how accurate that is on Pro Cycling Stats, where it shows what they?
It's pretty good. They asked him about it after the race. And he said it was crippled. He was like, oh, I just want to enjoy today. So,
because he has Amstel and Liège and Worlds on the calendar.
Well, if that was his answer at the finish, that means I would take that as a yes.
He's doing that's, and I mean, he should have actually in 2020, I believe he had a good chance of winning Liège. He was closing down on the lead group, finished 10th, I believe. And you're like, oh, that's a pretty good result. I don't think many people know the day before that. This is when he didn't know what races were important and what weren't. He did a 50K solo breakaway at the freaking Bink Bank Tour the day before Liège and was probably pretty tired from that. And could have won Liège that year if he just would have rested or done an actual proper lead in to Liège.
Are you suggesting he didn't know how good he was or his team?
I would always joke that like he doesn't, like he's dyslexic with race importance. Like, what do you mean Bink Bank Tour is less important than Liège? Exactly.
I mean, in the vein of things that nobody's ever heard of, one of them would be the Bink Bank Tour.
You got to go.
What is that? Is that in China? What is that fucking? I mean, the Bink Bank Tour? Come on. Nobody. Come on. Stop.
But he's winning, even with these flubs early, he's winning monuments. Like he's winning Roubaix and Flanders so fast that he's closing in on Boonen and Cancellara. Like Boonen won, what, 4 Roubaix, 3 Flanders. That's the record. Cancellara 3-3. Vanderpool has 3-2, and he's 29 years old. I mean, we could be looking at the best cobbled racer of all time.
And his calendar, his motivation may have changed with so many high level riders being injured right now. Wouldn't you be licking your chops?
Yeah, I would.
Going, oh, I want to race everything right now. Throw them at me.
Yeah, I don't know. Keep in mind, y'all, we've touched on in the past. I mean, there is no love lost with him and Wout van Aert. So I suspect, I don't know the kid, but he had to be disappointed when Wout van Aert had that crash and is out for so long. You guys asked about it earlier. I mean, the preparation for these races are not safe races. Right? These are races, they're not all down doing the Vuelta Catalunya and the Ruta del Sol and doing training camps in Spain. I mean, the lead up to these races are dangerous races, right? Gent-Wevelgem, E3 Harelbeke, all these other things, they're dangerous. So, and you kind of have to do them just to get those types of legs underneath you. And that's why, you know, obviously took its toll on some of the big favorites.
I mean, JB, I guess Tade is pretty good. That's one big obstacle between him and Liège.
Great point. I mean, nobody's ever going to do, or will have a performance like this in our lifetime in a race like Milan-San Remo. But what was before that, right? That was Strade Bianche. Tade did the same thing. Vanderpool did the same thing in Flanders. And again, today in Roubaix, we just haven't seen. Those are three huge races. But nobody has ever seen that with those kind of performances, minute, 2 minute, 3 minute wins. Something's going on. I'm not complaining. I mean, it does make it a look. I thought the women's race was incredible. I actually said it on the women's show yesterday. Like, gosh, thank God Lotto Kopecky wasn't up the road by a minute and nothing. You're just like, all right, well, it's over. It's cool coming to the line in Roubaix on a velodrome with 5 or 6 humans sprinting it out. That's exciting. But we are seeing these performances that are just, they're so far ahead of just second place. Pretty, I mean, that's impressive.
I mean, in basketball, it sounds simplistic, but teams learned that 3 is more than 2. So NBA teams shoot exponentially more threes than even 5 years ago, because the more threes you can get up, the more points you can score is the simple math. I kind of think the same thing's happening here, where the strongest riders, like Tade at Strada, what's the one way I cannot lose this race? I'm stronger than everyone else. I'll attack from so far out that no one even wants to follow me, and I'll solo away. Lance, if you would have walked into the team bus at Liège 2022 and said, Johan, sit down, I got this, I'm attacking from 150 out, he probably would have said that's a bad idea or that's risky, right? Yeah. But for some reason, that's no longer considered risky. It's actually considered the safest thing to do. But maybe this is, it's fueling based. I don't fully understand it either.
Yeah.
I get the sense too, and I'll throw Pogacar in this group with Vanderpool, like when the big spectator turnout, you know, and it's in France, I think people are at this point now where like, it's like going to see Willie Nelson in concert. Like I've got to see them. I want to see this legend. So I can say 30 years from now, oh yeah, I saw Vanderpool race. I think we're getting some of that with Pogacar as well. Just these next tier level talent that can put 3 minutes on, like people just want to see them and say, I saw them while they were racing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good, that's good. That's because they're stars, right? It's like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson. You got, especially when they get on up, that's, you got to go. You got to go. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see y'all, I guess, this week. We got Flesh Wallone. We got Liège coming up. We got a lot of stuff coming up. So thanks for tuning in. Amstel's after. Yeah. So we got a few more weeks of action before we run and head into the Giro and all that it holds. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see y'all later.
Yeah, thanks for having me.